Welcome to another episode of Differences Not Deficits, where we discuss what we are learning and changing in our therapy so we can support and empower neurodivergent individuals with compassion and respect. Thank you for listening so we can all learn together.
The primary purpose of Differences Not Deficits is to educate and inform. The views expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not constitute educational or medical advice. Listeners should consult with their professionals familiar with each individual or family for specific guidance. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Differences Not Deficits podcast. In this episode, we continue our interview with Matt Lowry. If you haven't listened to part one, please start there. Matt is an autistic, licensed psychological practitioner in Louisville, Kentucky. He provides evaluation and therapy for children, teens, and adults using a strength-based approach to help autistic people in ways best suited for their individual needs. He also provides educational trainings and co-hosts the Autistic Culture podcast, where they discuss autistic contributions to society and culture. In this episode, Matt will share his thoughts about special interests or SPINs, his opinion on the DSM-5, and some advice for parents. Take a listen.
So we're going to transition a tiny bit, or I am going to make us transition. because so much of the world for an autistic person is, you know, having age appropriate things or having, you know, you must graduate and level yourself up and move on. And so much of that is like when you talk about, you know, SPINs, your special interests and things, we are almost forcing people to change their SPINs and their feel goods in order to, you know, have this graduated level up, whatever the world wants you to be. And so we kind of eliminate those. I mean, I've been a behaviorist now for 20 years, and I'm sad to say that because it doesn't make sense anymore. And it doesn't make sense in terms of those feel good things. So if somebody's in college and they're accessing and grabbing these things, you know, but we're telling them, no, you're not supposed to do it. So, I mean, can you speak a little bit towards, you know, SPINs and what that is to an autistic person?
It's everything. They're not just interests. They're not just hobbies. They're integral parts of our psyche. The things that we love for a multitude of reasons, and they become a part of who we are. Like Star Wars, it is an indelible part about me. The Force, the Jedi, everything about it informs me as a human being. And I once had an autistic kid, and the autistic kid was talking about how stepdad said that the autistic kid needed to quote unquote grow up and stop buying toys. And I was like, needed to stop buying kids' toys. And I was like, well, you know, technically he has a point, because there will come a point where you have lots of disposable income, and then you can start buying adult toys. And adult toys are way, way cooler than kids' toys, because I have a lot of disposable income, and I can buy all sorts of cool stuff. And I love my interests. I love showing off my interests. And back in the pandemic, I switched to a telehealth only model. And I originally had all of my degrees behind me because I thought that that's what people wanted to see. And then off to the side, there was Pikachu back here. And it turns out everyone wanted to see Pikachu and all my cool stuff. So I completely rearranged my office. My books are over there. My degrees are behind the door. And over here is a whole bunch of cool stuff. And now when people see all the cool stuff, they instantly relate to me, because they say, oh, I didn't know that you know about Mjolnir. Yeah, I own Mjolnir. You've got Mando helmets. You've got like the Green Lantern. You've got Pokemon. And it helps me bond with other people who get it, because it gives you a level of street cred better than just about anything, because it means that I understand who they are based on understanding their special interests. And that's the big thing about working with autistic people of any age, because if you're unwilling to learn about their special interests, it's like saying, your grandma Rose doesn't matter to me. Don't talk anymore about her. You're clearly distracting from therapy by talking about the death of your grandmother. Just get over it. And that's not something that we can do, because we live our life through the lens of our special interests.
Right. And when you, and along those lines,
What would you, I mean, there's, I hear, I've heard it so many times, and I have clients who are embarrassed by, like, are afraid to even mention that they like a little, like a younger child's book, or, you know, like Pete the Cat, or that they enjoy watching shows that are more animated and for younger kids. And it just breaks my heart that we can't just make that okay, because if it was a neurotypical person and they were watching a show like that, it'd be totally fine. Like somehow, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that brings up a quote from C.S. Lewis, who I'm convinced is one of us, because he and J.R.R. Tolkien used to hang out together. And there's this infamous story about how they just decided to go to a fancy dress party dressed as polar bears, as one does. But he said, "When I was 10, I read fairy tales in secret and would have been ashamed if I had been found doing so. Now that I am 50, I read them openly. When I became a man, I put away childish things, including the fear of childishness and the desire to be very grown up." Because that, you gotta be you. And living your life based on the judgment of other strangers. For the longest time, my ex-wife would not let me put my stuff in the living room. Because all of my stuff had to be hidden in the basement, because her mother told her, "What happens if you have teacher friends over? Your teacher friends will judge you based on his stuff." And it's like, well, I pay for the house. If they want to pay for the house, then I'll be it, and I'll decorate however they like. As long as I'm paying for the house and I'm living here and I'm staying here 24/7, I want to do the way that I do it. And that caused a lot of issues. So it's very, very difficult when you.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we have a lot of intergenerational stuff going on that just, that's my world. But we do what our parents did, our grandparents did, and that's just the way we do it. And
pass it down and just keep that trauma going from the one generation to the next until someone says, "Enough of this, I'm going to a lot of therapy."
Absolutely.
And it takes somebody to stand up and say no more. And that, oh my God, that's a tough one. That takes so much time and so much energy and so much dedication and a lot of heartache, because a lot of the times you have to cut off the trauma. And that means ending relationships with people who were once close to you.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think Debbie and I both share in that sentiment a little bit. You know, it's kind of like the toxic people in your life, and you have to make those boundaries clear. And sometimes it's really hard and people don't understand, but at the same time, I can't operate if it's happening. And so, you know, it's hard. It's not something that, you know, comes over time quickly. It's every day noticing little things and going, "Oh, okay, I don't want to do that. Do it different."
Incremental steps. That's the only way to do it. And that's a big thing about like therapy in general, because a lot of people go to therapy and say, "All right, I've got 5 sessions, fix me."
Oh, gosh.
And like, well, it took you a few decades to get into this situation. It's going to take a while to get out. And like, I'm not a mechanic, nor am I a wizard. All I can do is advise you, because all I got is my words. So.
Yeah, and thank you for saying that, because that is so key. I don't think people understand that, really, how it's a journey. Yeah. I mean, it's a process. This is not a quick fix. And especially, I feel, when working with autistic people, it's, look how many years that you were probably told what to do. And what I get a lot is people who feel they are bad, quote unquote, bad, because of the not being able to live up to the performance that they were supposed to meet, or that they had behaviors.
Yeah. The internalized ableism is a killer. Just this artificial set of beliefs that have been bestowed upon you that you never asked for. And because, especially, autistic people come from autistic people. This is the way we recruit. We make them. And if you are an autistic person, you likely have at least one autistic parent who likely had at least one autistic parent who likely had at least one autistic parent. And you can trace it all the way up the family tree, even if they acknowledge it or not. And there's a lot of people who say, no, I am perfectly fine. I just have a $5 million train set up in my basement and no one can talk about it.
Or collectible art that sits in the garage. Put it out anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
No, that's true. And you know, we listened to your Learn, Play, Thrive seminar, and it was absolutely kind of eye-opening, even though you read about these things, but you put it so eloquently. And one thing that I really love that you did is kind of redefining the DSM and what that actually means in terms for an autistic person. Because, you know, so many times I try to explains like, oh, you know, is that an autistic person? And then they go, okay, well, the three things in the DSM says this, 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 but it doesn't necessarily fit all those categories. And it's so much more than we were first thought it was. And now, I mean, if you haven't, for our listeners, if you haven't actually seen Matt or learned anything about him, he has an amazing kind of diagram. And Matt, I believe it's on your Matt Lowry
LPP.
So Matt Lowry LPP. .com, the meme gallery. So
yes,
the meme gallery that he has, that he kind of posts these things in pictures, and the DSM, he breaks down the DSM a little bit better because it's a bigger picture of a whole person rather than these things that are deficits and we're trying to match you into a neurotypical mold. It's more look at the person as a whole, and that's what we're missing. Can you just share? I mean, I know it's going to take you forever to share the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a lot, but maybe just break down the categories, I guess.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about it. For those who are interested, it's going to be part of a book that is coming out later this year, hopefully, from Difference Press, because Angela, my podcast, we do the Autistic Culture podcast. She is my editor and publisher. So we are going to be publishing that, and it's going to be talking about autistic-centered therapy, and it's going to include a dictionary about autistic related terms. And I think we've got like 180 terms about autistic life, because again, there's a lot of things that, for instance, like pebbling, we as autistic people, we love to gift things to people that we find important. For instance, like if somebody needs a light bulb, we'll say, hi, here's a light bulb. If somebody needs information, we'll say, I wikied the information for you. Here's your information. We give these little gifts like penguin pebbles. And for those who don't know, these may seem like odd behaviors, but when you know that there's an entire language around it, it becomes much more normalized. And that's a big thing about like understanding us from like a human perspective, because like you said, the DSM is very, very pathologizing, and that is incredibly unfortunate. Because again, I think that that's a big reason why a lot of neurotypical evaluators are incredibly reluctant to diagnose autism. When I worked in community mental health, I was deep in the neuro closet because, trigger warning for this, again, major trigger warning for this. I was working, at the time I identified as Aspie before we knew that Hans Asperger was a Nazi who murdered a lot of autistic children. So, I worked, with autistic kids in the schools, and I had my Aspie group, and my kids would come in and we would talk about Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon and just have a social group where we talked about autistic stuff and just had like a ball, and they just got together outside of group, and they're still friends to this day. They are great. If any of you are listening, I love you guys. When I was talking with my clinical supervisor about this, she was like, huh, how's your life going? I was like, fine, my SB group's going great. And she's like, Matt, you can't say that word. I was like, why? Which word? Aspie. I was like, well, I identify as Aspie myself because, again, they said I got the Asperger's, and I researched all the autism, and I relate better to autistic people. And she said, Matt, you can't be Asperger's. You're a professional. If you call yourself that, it's like calling yourself, and again, I quote this, trigger warning, it's like calling yourself retarded. So I said, I will never tell you anything else about me ever again. So I stayed deep in the closet. And when I did autism evaluations, my superiors would often tell me to look for theory of mind, because they say that we don't have the ability to take other people's perspectives. The empathy, because apparently we don't have empathy. And to always do IQ tests, because we have to have a low IQ. Yeah. And all of these things to dehumanize us. But that's the thing about the DSM criteria. That was a very long tangent getting us back to this. Because, again, the DSM proper talks about deficits in social communication interaction. I talk about differences. Differences in communication are tendency to go off on tangents, as recently evidenced. Tendency to talk passionately about our spins. Tendency to not engage in small talk because we don't find it useful. We have differences in nonverbal communication. I do a thing that I call sprinkler head talk, where I will look around the room and just as I'm talking and spraying words out all around the room, because I find it very awkward because I have to lock my head in place and then I forget what I'm talking about. And then I'm just because that's how my brain works. And because of this, we are often shunned because studies have shown that neurotypical people make a lot of snap judgments about us. And when presented with transcripts of how we speak, they can't tell any difference between us and them. But when they watch us, the differences in body language, the differences in cadence and rhythm of speech make us seem non-human. We fall into this uncanny valley of they know that we're weird, but they don't know how. Which is a big reason why autistic people from other cultures seem to fit in better being foreign visitors. Because, like, if an autistic person from Japan comes to America, an American might say, oh, well, it's just because they're Japanese and that is acceptable. Yeah. Or if, you know, because, again, they attribute it to a cultural thing. Well, it is a cultural thing because, again, by definition, autism is a culture because it's genetic. We are raised by autistic people. We have autistic eating habits. We have an autistic language. Mm-hmm. Every hallmark of a culture, we have it. So, I mean, it technically is. But again, they say that the repetitive behavior is a problem because we stim or have echolalia. We like routines because, again, the world is chaotic and we have security in knowing that we have some control over that. We have our special interests. We dive so deep into the stuff that we love. Other people can't understand it and they find that it's obsessive. And again, we are very, because of our hyperconnected brains, we either tune stuff out entirely, we may not feel pain because we're monotropically focused on something else, or we are very, very sensitive to something, and the paper cut we got is the worst thing ever because that's the only thing we can monotropically focus on. And when using the pathologizing definitions for all of these, it makes us subhuman and in need of being fixed. And the biggest problem is criteria D, because it's all judged by other people, not us. And that's because autism is still today believed to be only a young white cisgender boy problem instead of a neurotype that affects every people of every culture of every gender. And that's a massive, massive issue because there's a lot of people who believe that it needs to be fixed immediately, and we are taught that it needs to be fixed. And that's the reason why a lot of training that we get in school is very substandard, because it comes from outsiders who look at young children and say, boy, that's weird. We need to fix that. Otherwise, they're going to grow up to be weird. Instead of learning how we do things, and we need to completely change how we train professionals so that we see the inherent humanity in everyone, so that people can learn to work with their brains instead of trying to fit this mythical norm. There is no normal. There is no, there's a statistical average, but trying to force everybody to fit a brain that doesn't work for them is just, it's colonialism. Yeah. It's not cool. I mean, it hurts.
And itself is exhausting. Yeah. I mean,
it is.
It's just plain exhausting. And so if you're trying to constantly match yourself to what the unspoken expectation is of the world, how can you really focus on anything else and really feel good about yourself? Because you're trying to constantly reach this bar that's non-existent. And every time you feel like you've kind of reached it, it's already up here. And somehow, you know, someone else thought of something else. So I'm right there with you. I believe that, you know, we need to educate people a little bit different on how you actually approach a person with autism and how you actually address some of these things. I mean, I've worked in schools, and I mean, I went into a profession where I can buy toys and it's appropriate because I buy, you know, play with kids and I hang out with, you know, teens. But at the same time, it's exhausting to feel like you're constantly behind that bar and never being able to reach it. And, you know, it's kind of like you said, it's not that deficit, but it's a different culture and a different language that you just need to start learning, because it is a whole person and it's just different.
Yeah, very much so.
And so kind of with that too, like, you know, you mentioned that kind of autistic accent, that autistic language, and kind of comes with, you can kind of see and identify some people now that I've been in the field for so long. You can kind of go, oh, you know, maybe there's something a little off, and maybe in myself as well. So I kind of pick it up. But at the same time, what would you kind of say to people, like, thoughts on stimming, thoughts on
digits, or
sometimes that's just a release and an outlet that some people need. I mean, there's a reason for those things that are happening. And so we might say, oh, you're trying to reach this expectation and now you're just kind of flapping and stimming. So what are your thoughts on stimming?
Yeah. It's a self-regulation behavior. Even now, as we talk, I'm playing with my Stimrold. I love it. It's nice and smooth. I play with it a lot. It's an enormous emerald that I got off of Etsy for $80 because it's lab grown. And it helps me self-regulate. Yeah. When I'm understimulated, I stim in order to get regulated. Mm-hmm. If I'm overstimulated, I need to stim in order to calm myself down. And if we taught people how to effectively self-regulate or co-regulate, we wouldn't have meltdowns, we wouldn't have shutdowns. And again, every creature on Earth stims. We just do it more than the average because we have more sensory input. We're doing more processing. And I believe that we need to normalize stimming for everybody. I believe that if we normalize stim tools and fidgets, this is another one of my favorites. It is a multi-tool that's a multi-tool fidget spinner with all of these removable bits that I can use to fix things as needed, spin it. It's made out of die-cast metal. It's got a nice heft to it. I found it at Walmart for $1.
That is nice.
And it is literally a stim tool. And I don't know how, this is the ultimate adult stim tool because it's totally functional.
Yes.
It's fun to play with. I recommend everybody go out.
Obviously we don't have a screen right now. We are one day going to do that.
Oh,
but
yes.
What would you describe that? It's like
it is a fidget spinner made of aluminum that has six different points on there with removable screwdriver bits. And they're all magnetic, so it's very satisfying to pull them out, put them back in repeatedly, and you can spin it around and also use it to, you know, adjust woodworking as needed in case you need to screw or unscrew Phillips flathead and two different size hex nuts or hex keys.
That is perfect.
So it is a tool that I advise everybody to look for. Again, only $1 at Walmart. So I could not recommend it more. If I'd found more, I would have gotten 30 and just freely passed them out to people as gifts. But
on that note about stimming, what would you recommend when sometimes the stimming or it can be dangerous or could harm, like injure themselves doing it?
Yeah, this is a big thing about it because when we do stuff, occasionally we are in so much distress, especially kids, that we might bite, that we might cut, that we might do things that are, even biting fingernails can be self-destructive if you bite them down to the quick and you might get infected, pulling apart the cuticles. There's all sorts of stuff. And this is a big thing because we need education on healthy stimming. We need ways to read. I think of it as like a river. We can't dam it up because it'll eventually explode and kill us. We need to redirect the river away and teach people how to stem, how to fidget, how to bounce, how to do it in healthy ways that they like and fits with their personal biological needs. There's a lot of kids who, you know, could benefit from having shiny rocks to play with. And I really believe that every classroom needs to have a box of shiny rocks. I will die on this hill. You need a box of rocks that are nice and smooth and pretty, and just so you can look at them, play with them in your hand, juggle them around. I think that would benefit literally everyone.
Like, here's mine.
There you go. That's what I'm screaming, man. Yes, penguin rock. I like that.
I did.
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
It fits perfect and I hold it. And I painted it because now it's a character and it's mine.
I love it. Is it a crow or a penguin?
The idea is a penguin.
Oh, good. Good. I got it right. Good. Yes. Excellent.
You know, instead of having just a random rock and they're like, what's that? I'm like, oh, but look, it's my pet pal. Like, look. No, it's appropriate. Yeah.
Well, it's a worry stone. Worry stones. That's what I have.
Exactly. That's the thing. We need to normalize it and make it more appropriate so it's more accessible and more socially advocated for. Because if we have this stuff and if we have more sensory friendly environments, we won't have to deal with eloping. Because I always think of like autistic kids as the canary in the coal mine. Because if a classroom environment is not working for the autistic kid, it's probably not working for anybody else. It's just that other people are able to sit in place and not jump up and run out of the room screaming. So if you have one kid who jumps up and runs out of the room screaming, chances are the other kids are not a big fan of it either.
And that's kind of where that masking comes in so big.
Exactly.
Kids are huge maskers because innately, you want to please people. You want to be the good kid. You want to reach their expectations and get there. But it's impossible because of all the sensory input you're actually calculating and doing all the time. So, I mean, we see so many people mask and so many people not authentically living who they are because of that fear of not fitting in or being made fun of or being bullied. And it's a problem.
Yeah. We need that peer acceptance in middle school. I remember a few, God, I hated middle school. There were a few instances where I was in an art class and a kid complained that my drawing of a shoe was, quote, too realistic. And I was like, well, you'll complain about anything, won't you? And I also remember distinctly that there was a way of socializing where you could make literally anything bad by saying, you like blank? Oh, wow. And make them feel bad about liking it, even though there's absolutely no other data about it. It's like, you like pizza? Mm-hmm. Oh, and then, oh no, now I feel ashamed of pizza for some reason because of that connotation that has no other data. And that weird social shame. I mean, granted, it keeps us, well, I mean, honest to God, I don't think that, I think that very few people are likely to become cannibals anyway. But, you know, there are a few social norms that, you know, I believe that we all agree on as a society to work better together. But at the same time, we need a lot more personal freedom to be ourselves within the social construct. Because, again, we all agree not to harm each other. We all agree not to berate each other. We all agree, you know, these basic, you know, ideas for living together as human beings. But as far as that goes, you know, like the band that you like the movies that you like fidget with rocks. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's not hurting anybody, if it's not hurting yourself, have fun with it. And I don't understand why we impart such shame on such things. Because, but again, that goes back to internalized ableism, internalized shame, need for conformity, the colonialism, all that kind of stuff. And it's so deeply rooted that it's going to take generations of intense work to, you know,
absolutely
fight that.
And I think that's kind of where, you know, the empathy problem does come in, because autistic people do have empathy, and sometimes to the extreme empathy, where they absorb
empathy,
people's, you know, energy and feelings, and so you're almost trying to not make that person feel that way, and so you're you're feeling the distress and you're trying to do something different to make it go away because you feel it. And so I think that's a big part Absolutely. Of that, that empathy problem, that, you know, they have actually more hyper empathy. And so
I was talking to an ADHD special ed teacher the other day. She's ADHD. She works with ADHD and autistic clients. And she was talking about how she cannot watch horror movies because she entirely empathizes with the characters and she can't deal with that emotional overstimulation. Right. And like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I am one of those people. I can't. They destroy my life. Like, yeah. I can't do it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, can't put yourself right into the situation. And that is reasonable because why would you want to go on an experience that taxes right. you so?
And I mean, it even goes to say with like things that happened in history. So you have these, you know, biographies and things that sometimes it's so hard to absorb because people are who they are. And so even that is hard for me.
Yeah, yeah. Massive injustice, massive abuses. And that's why we have such a high justice sensitivity, because we cannot tolerate those sort of things happening. We need to make the world fair. We need to make the world mm-hmm. equitable. We need to make the world a better place because we cannot tolerate it as it is.
Absolutely. We just wanted to we're kind of running out of time, but we kind of went over, but
it happens.
We just wanted to, sorry to take too much of your time, but we wanted to get your opinion on what advice would you give to parents when they're looking for a therapist or looking for people for their children or their young adults?
Neurodiversity affirming is the new version of quote organic, in that it's largely meaningless. I would ask about their opinions of autism. I would ask about, you know, their approach to therapy, because again, a lot of people try to do neuronormative techniques in order to make people fit in instead of that's why we invented autistic centered therapy. That's about like living authentically autistic and problem solving in autistic ways. And if you're looking for a therapist, if someone is trying to quote unquote fix someone, that's not the way. If someone is not willing to engage in a special interest for a session or two, or relate to people through a special interest, I have had several breakthroughs by translating therapeutic techniques through people's special interests because they get it and like, oh, I never thought of it that way. That's fantastic. And this is just finding mm-hmm. people who understand you or your child on a personal level. And I very, very much recommend parents of autistic kids going through that identity exploration process themselves, because either they are autistic, or they probably produced a child with an autistic person. And if you produce a child with an autistic person, do you like that person? And if you do, take into account that there's a reason. So please be mindful that we need helpful allies. And again, there's a lot of autistic culture to love. We are very inviting to neurotypical people, to allistic people, into autistic culture, because I believe everybody would benefit from a quieter environment as necessary. Comfier mm-hmm. sheets, you know, yep. being able to stim. I'm sitting here in cotton yeah. shorts and no shoes because it's comfortable to me. If we all lived a more comfortable life, I think we would all be happier. So again, approaching it as a cultural standpoint, we're welcome to have you. You're welcome to Autistica. And I think that you might like what you find. And that's the approach to therapy that you need, finding what mm-hmm. works for you personally, because there is no one size fits all to therapy.
Absolutely. Thank you. That was beautiful.
Absolutely. No, and thank you so much for your thoughts and just your eye-opening, you know, experiences and how you can relate it so much. Cause I think the hard part too is a lot of people assume that an autistic person isn't necessarily smart enough or have the ability to, you know, hold a degree and have a profession and all these things. And that's not true. We are putting them there. We are putting them in those boxes by having, you know, check off these assessment boxes and going, okay, well, this is where, you know, they are. And so yeah. I think there are so much more that an autistic person can do if we just allowed them to authentically be themselves. And, you know, a slower world is definitely necessary for them.
You need a slower world anyway.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. Get rid of the grind. Live life as we need, because this is not sustainable.
Nope.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much,
Matt. No, Matt, thank you so much. And I look so much forward to your book.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I want to know.
Oh, my pleasure.
I want to know what to do next.
I'm very excited about it. I've never been an author before, so it'll be really cool.
Oh, that's so amazing. And could you just remind us where our listeners could find you if they're...
My website is Matt Lowry, LPP, as in MATTLOWRY, LPP, as in licensed psychological practitioner.com. I am also on the Autistic Culture podcast. You can find it on Spotify, iTunes. We've got a Substack for it. And I occasionally do trainings with Learn, Play, Thrive. My next, it turns out that the Learn, Play, Thrive training was so popular. Meg actually said it was the most popular training and best received training they've ever had. So she asked if they could rerun it. And I was like, yeah, go ahead. That sounds good for everybody. So hopefully it'll be periodically rerun.
And that's awesome.
I just finished the slides for the upcoming training on doing autism affirming diagnosing and how to how to do a better job in being autism positive and identifying people without pathologizing. So I hope that people like that too. So I've got some stuff coming up with Maisie Sutancho from Autism Career Pathways. She'll be posting stuff about that. That's actually coming up, oh God, in March. Wow. That means the month that is tomorrow. So that'll be the next thing. So yeah. So we'll be doing that.
I know. Happy leap day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, hello, it's leap day.
Yeah. The rarest month or the rarest day of the year. Yay. Or the rarest day of 4 years. So yeah.
4 years.
Yeah. 4 years. Yeah.
So cool. No. Thank you, Matt.
Awesome, Matt. My pleasure. And I'm sure, as we kind of disseminate information and we have any questions, we'll be, reaching out, and please reach out to us if you have something cool to share, and we will definitely share it with our families here. And the more people know, the better we can do.
Yay, information. So yay, knowledge.
Thank you, Matt.
It's been great. Have a good one.
Thank you so much.
We love hearing from you. So if you have questions, comments, or just want to connect, you can find our links to LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram on our show notes. Feel free to drop us a message, leave us a comment, or ask a question, or just share your thoughts with us. Your thoughts matter, and we can't wait to hear from you.